Now a medley of the hits by M.
Wow! I can't believe that you got that. Holy cow!
Pop music with a K.
Yes. And a Z.
Interestingly, M spelled with a K. This is the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. This portion brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement window company in the United States. The original $189 window company online at windowworldst.louis.com. I am Paul Harris, Dan Strauss and Ian Geiser are here with me. And Colin Jeffrey joins us now for the showbiz segment of the show. Hi, Colin. How are you?
Doing well. How are you today, Paul?
We've all survived Ice Storm 2017.
Yes.
At least thus far. You have any trouble driving in here?
Just people going too fast. That was it.
Yeah.
No, the roads were fine.
But there are so few of them on the roads that it's not all that big a problem. Two things I want to do here today, because we will have people who are in ice storm panic mode and not leaving their house for 72 hours.
Yes.
And so later on, I want us to give them some suggestions for things that they could watch on Netflix or Amazon Prime, streaming suggestions.
Yes.
If you will. But before we do that, there are several movies that are opening today. What have you seen this week?
I've seen Patterson.
Okay, you go first with that.
Fair enough. Patterson stars Adam Driver as a man named Patterson living in Patterson, New Jersey. He's a bus driver there. So Adam Driver drives a bus in Patterson. He's named Patterson.
Okay.
Does that all make sense?
Yeah.
It's not based on a true story, although it sounds like it might be. Adam Driver likes to write, his character likes to write poetry. As he's walking to the bus depot at the beginning of every day, he's composing the poetry, and when he gets there, he writes it down in his notebook before he drives for the day. And then as he goes through the day, he hears people having conversations on the bus behind him, sees things happening, and then at the end of the day, he returns home to his wife, who's an artist. Every night, then, he takes his English bulldog, Marvin, and they go down the street to the corner pub where he has one beer. And talks to people there. The bar owner he knows. It's a small town. It's a working class town. A few other people in the bar. And then he goes back home to his wife. And then they wake up the next day.
Wait, that's it?
Takes place over 8 days. Well, really 7 days and a morning. It's just 1 week in his life. We're seeing a week in his life.
And the same thing happens every day?
Well, no, it changes.
It's the same routine, just different people he interacts with.
Yeah, and that's probably what's nice about it, is my wife hates things that have too much drama.
Mm-hmm.
This is not, nothing horrible is going to happen in this. That's not what that's about.
Does Marvin ever poop, and then he has to pick it up?
No.
Oh,
no.
That would be something different.
Yeah.
The dog
That'd be a plot point you can point to.
The dog is adorable. Point.
Yeah.
The dog actually won the prestigious Palm Dog Award at the Cannes Film Festival. I'm not kidding. That's a real
apostrophe OG.
I wish. That'd be so clever, but no, they're not that clever. Just Palm Dog. Nelly was the dog's name.
Okay.
But what this is really about, there's not a huge plot. It's just a week in his life of him writing poems. His wife wants him to publish them and let other people read them. He doesn't. He keeps them in his secret notebook. And instead, what this is about, it's not a how-to as to write poetry, but what it tries to do is to take us into the mind of someone who's a poet or philosophical in that way, and that something will happen. His wife one morning mentions that she had a dream that they were madly in love and had two kids, and they were twins. And so through the rest of the movie, you're going to notice there are twins all over the place, identical twins all over, like a disturbing number of identical twins in the small town.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're sort of, it's keeping you a little on edge. Is he actually seeing this? Yes, he's seeing it, and he's reacting much as you would, with sort of like increasing bewilderment. And what are the odds I'm seeing all these twins? As things happen through the week, as he speaks to people, or again, nothing really happens
that's of note. It sounds like it's a movie difficult. About a guy who lives his regular life,
but instead what you're seeing is he has a box. They keep a bowl of matchbooks on the table, and he picks up a box of matches and he looks at it.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of just you or I think, oh, there's a box of matches, this says, well, maybe there's something more to this. And it says the poet in us, or the poet in this man, looks at it and says, no, there's a story here. What is it about the matches? Is it the boxes? Is it the type? And he sort of explores how this box of matches makes him feel, which I know sounds ridiculous.
Incredibly boring.
I'm going to strike up a conversation with my wife.
No, he doesn't.
Because of these matches.
He and his wife talk at the same times. They talk every morning before he leaves. They talk when he gets home before he has a beer. That's, it's...
You know, this is the movie for people who think, you know what, my life could be a movie. No, 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 it can't. This is what your life would be like.
Here's what makes it good, though. They actually had a poet come and write poems for this, because he reads you the poems, sort of. It's as if he's writing them.
Mm-hmm.
When you hear them, the poetry's beautiful. If you like poetry, it's good poetry. It's a
does it rhyme, or is that rhymeless poetry?
No. He doesn't particularly like rhymes, although he does like some internal rhymes. So you'll get a course on that. Like, that's the thing. If you are interested in seeing a movie that delves into sort of the philosophy of an artistic mind, not will make you a poet, but just if you're curious as to what a poet might feel,
mm-hmm,
or how they may interact with the world,
mm-hmm,
this is a movie to check out. It is small and intimate, and it's an hour and 55 minutes of, to be honest, not a lot of, like, it's not a plot. That's not what it's about.
Instead of seeing this movie, couldn't you just wake up in the morning, have a cup of coffee, look at a matchbook, go to work, talk to the people you work with, come home in the evening, talk to your wife, watch some TV, go to sleep, and wake up the next day?
Well, you got
to
walk your dog.
Oh, walk your dog, etc.
The awesome dog.
Wouldn't that be the same as seeing this movie?
You could, I guess, but...
Why do I want to see somebody else doing that?
Well, because you can't really see yourself walking. You're walking, but you can't see
yourself.
No, but
I see all the other people who are leading their dreary everyday lives like I am.
Because it's pretty. Like, I'm just going to say that. Because it's pretty.
Okay.
It's not... I don't know. Have you ever been to Passaic Falls?
No.
In the Northeast?
No.
It's a waterfall that's just outside Patterson, or in Patterson. And,
okay.
And so it's...
Does this guy go to Passaic Falls?
He does. And there's actually a scene at the end of the movie where it sort of provides a little... He meets another poet at heart.
Does anything happen at Passaic Falls other than the
conversation. He has a conversation with another poet at heart. I'm not going to defend... This is not a movie for everyone. I think it's playing at the Tivoli.
Okay.
And that might be it.
Uh-huh.
And that's about the size run it should have. It's not going to be a big earning movie. It's Adam Driver acting... well, in a movie. He's good again. It turns out he's a good actor, and mm-hmm, keeps reaffirming that. And it's a story about poetry. These are not things that are going to sell a million tickets.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're willing to, it sounds weird, but put in the work to sort of let this movie, experience this movie, I think you'll enjoy it. But it's not for, it's going to have a small audience.
What
did
you
fine.
Give it on a scale of 10?
I enjoyed it. I gave it a 7 out of 10 with the caveat that if you're sitting here like Paul and Ian and Dan are all looking at me, if you're looking at your radio like
if
this...
If there were a button here that allowed us to have you see eye rolling...
Yeah.
Yes, the eye roll button.
We'd be setting a Guinness record here today.
There once was a man from Nantucket.
It's not even that amusing.
I'm a poet. No.
No.
It would have been cool if he'd have thrown the dog into the falls.
Why would he hurt the dog?
No, he wouldn't hurt him.
But it would be action.
It's a big waterfall, Dan.
Something would happen.
Yeah.
But yes, it came out to at a weird time. Like, this is going to just, they just flushed this for some reason.
And by the way, this is a guy who writes poetry that doesn't rhyme, so his would be, there once was a man from Nantucket who liked carpet. And he and his wife went to the beach, and then they went home in their car.
You know what?
Wait a second, that's not a poem.
Yeah.
You know what? It would have been cool, because this is a span over like a week in his life. If one of the days or two of the days there was an ice storm, and he slipped walking.
Now you got a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. He has to fall.
Yes.
There has to be a slip and a fall.
Yeah.
Now you got a movie. This doesn't sound like a movie.
And the dog runs and gets help, and brings people back to him.
I'm already buying tickets to Dan's movie before I'm buying tickets to this movie. I'll be honest with you.
Now, what's interesting, this director who did this real sort of philosophical piece also did, back in 1999, a movie called Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai. Did you ever see that?
No.
Really?
No.
Really?
What do you mean, really?
Wait a
second. Hold on
this.
A second. Dan, did you ever even hear of Ghost Dog, Year of the Samurai?
No.
The Way of the Samurai.
No. The Way of the Samurai.
Forrest Whitaker plays a mafia hitman who modeled himself after samurai and now finds himself targeted with an assassination. Go watch Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai. Like, go watch it. Go watch it. There's no reason you shouldn't go watch that movie.
Who is Samurai?
Oh, my gosh.
He's the guy who invented bread.
Oh.
You know, Sam Bread.
his cousins.
Which they don't,
with
which
his
they
cousins.
Don't, the grocery Pumpernickel. Stores are all out of it. Don't ask for it by name.
I think we're frustrating Colin.
I'm fine. You're not going to go see Patterson. That's fine.
No matter what we say, it's not the worst thing that has been said to him this week.
No. That's right.
All right. So Patterson, Colin gives us 7 out of 10. We give it 7 out of 10 eye rolls.
Yes.
One of the other movies that's opening this weekend, which you'll have to wait until after Ice Station 2017 is over, is a new Ben Affleck movie called Live by Night. Now, I saw this movie about 6 weeks ago because the studios released it in Los Angeles and New York and to the critics early because they wanted it to be in Oscar competition. Mm-hmm. It's not. It's not going to end up getting any Oscar nominations. But I do think it's a good movie. Now, I have to tell you, this is a mobster movie. And every few years, I see another mobster movie coming around and I go, you know what? I'm done with mob movies. I've seen them. I've seen The Godfather. I've seen Goodfellas. I've seen Donnie Brasco. You know, all of those great mob movies that have been made. The Departed. I don't need to see another one. And then another good one comes out, like the ones that I've mentioned. And like Al Pacino in Godfather 3, they pull me back in. And that's the way Live by Night affected me. This changed my mind again. It takes place in the 1920s during Prohibition. And Ben Affleck, who wrote it, directed it, produced it, and stars in it, plays a character named Joe Coughlin, whose father is a police captain. Joe is a World War I vet who says in the movie, I went away a soldier and I came back an outlaw. And he's involved in all sorts of minor criminal enterprises in Boston. And he's got a girlfriend who's played by the beautiful Sienna Miller, my co-star in Mississippi Grind.
Oh, ooh, hey. Well.
She's not actually in the scene with me. Well, yeah, she is, actually. She was there. The Sienna Miller character is the mistress of an Irish mob boss named Albert White. And Ben Affleck's character, Joe Coughlin, is seeing her on the side without the mob boss knowing. And by the way, here's a little tip for you kids. Don't date the girlfriends of mob bosses. It's not going to work out for you in the long run. So without going into too much detail about what happens, because I don't want to spoil this, because there are some blackmail involved. There are some double crosses involved in this movie. Joe eventually gets involved with a bootlegging operation in Tampa, Florida, on behalf of another mob boss, an Italian mob boss named Masso Pescatori, which is delicious with a pesto sauce. Ask for it by name. Things go so well for him in Ybor City in Tampa that he eventually expands the operation to include gambling and drugs. He gets involved with a Cuban businessman, falls for the businessman's sister, who's played by Zoe Saldana, who's very, very good in the movie. He also befriends the sheriff of Tampa, who's played by Chris Cooper, who is one of those actors who's been in almost every movie ever made. He's just great in everything he does. You may remember him from some of the Bourne movies where he was the head of the CIA.
American Beauty.
He's been in lots and lots of movies. The sheriff's daughter is played by Elle Fanning. She gets caught up in all of this. The KKK is involved. Now, all of this seems like a lot, and it is a lot. It's based on a Dennis Lehane novel. Is that how you pronounce it?
Lehane.
Okay. Yeah. Dennis Lehane novel. To give you an idea of who he is, he's the guy who wrote the book that the movie Mystic River was based on, that the movie Gone Baby Gone was based on, Shutter Island, Moonlight Mile. He's a really good writer. And the movies based on his works usually turn into pretty good movies. Not always, but usually turn into pretty good movies. Both Mystic River and Gone Baby Gone are great movies. The problem is that the book, and I didn't read the book, but in reading about the movie, the book is what would be called an epic because it takes place over 15 or more years. That's hard to compress into 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Of one movie. And Ben Affleck does that, and there are some time jumps in there. It may be too much story to tell in one movie. I actually think this might have done better if it were maybe like an 8-part HBO or Netflix drama, because you could have started out with the early days of the Affleck character in Boston and worked his way down to Tampa and then the people he gets involved in. It might have worked out better that way. However,
And there's always however in life.
Affleck has proven himself in Argo to be one heck of a director. He also directed Gone Baby Gone, the other movie I mentioned based on the Dennis Lehane book. He has a wonderful cast who he gets very good performances out of here. And the cinematography of this is so beautiful. There is one scene of a boat moving through the water of the Gulf of Mexico at sunset. And I can't imagine how difficult it was for them to get this shot, unless they CGI'd the sunset, which I don't think they did. It must have been one of those where they set up for hours and just wait, and he looks, and he says, now, go. And they shoot it, and it's magnificent shot that fills the screen. And the other stuff does involve... there's a lot of shooting, there's a lot of blood, there's some violence involved in here besides that. Although I think it's a little bit too much of a big story crammed into a two-hour movie, I walked out of there thoroughly entertained.
Wow.
And I like Affleck, and I like the movies he's made, both as an actor and a director, for the most part. And that cast that I just mentioned to you, none of them gives a bad performance. And so I recommend it. I'm giving it a 7.5 out of 10. It's called Live by Night.
Wow.
And it's open now. It may be one of the better things you're going to see in the month of January. We'll see. Now, there are, believe it or not, 5 other movies that are opening today. Now, why are so many movies opening here on what is effectively the second weekend of 2017? Are these mostly movies that the studios released elsewhere in December and they are not getting to us until now?
Well, some of them, yes. In some cases, they did release in time for the awards season, but some of them also, they just want to clean up early on. And some of them, one in particular, is so bad that they couldn't put it anywhere. Let's save that for last, though.
Okay.
Let's start with Patriots Day. Peter Berg and Mark Wahlberg come back together.
Yep.
They were Deepwater Horizon last year. Yep. This time, this go-round, it is an account of Police Commissioner Ed Davis in Boston, leading up to and the manhunt following the Boston Marathon bombing in 2013. Hard to believe it's been 2013. It'll be, well, that's before years this year. The Bye Bye Man is a separate movie. This is a horror movie.
Let me just say one thing about Patriots Day. Neither of us have seen it, but no. Did you see Deepwater Horizon?
I did not.
Okay, I saw it. I thought that they did a good job shooting the action in that movie, but there wasn't much story to go with it other than what we already knew about that drilling platform off the coast of the Gulf of Mexico and the BP spill and all that sort of stuff. And the movie may have made more people mad at BP because of that, but I didn't think it was very effective as a movie because there wasn't any real drama in it. Now, Patriots Day, the story of the Boston Marathon bombing, there's inherent drama in that story,
yeah,
and particularly in the search for the Tsarnaev brother who was still alive, who they hunted down in Watertown.
Yeah.
I wonder how they do that.
I'll be curious to see. I have to be honest, I try and steer clear of trailers as much as possible. I saw a Patriots Day trailer, though, and it left me with a bad taste because one of the last scenes is they've got the Mark Wahlberg plays a police officer, of course, and they're all walking away, getting ready to go look for someone or investigate. I don't know. They're walking away from a scene. And Mark Wahlberg says, and I hope this got cut from the film, it's a thing that didn't make it in, they picked the wrong town to mess with.
Ugh.
I'm hoping that was just like a one-off, real cheesy Mark Wahlberg line.
Because sometimes things that end up in trailers are not actually in the movie.
See Rogue One, for an example. There's an entire supercut of about a 3-minute trailer, about 90 seconds of it not appearing anywhere in the movie.
And by the way, John Goodman is also in Patriots Day. Does he play the police commissioner? Or
I don't think so. J.K. Simmons is in it. Michelle Monaghan. It's got an enormous cast. It's one of these that has everyone in it. It's getting good early reviews, though. Patriots Day is out. The Bye Bye Man is a horror film. So people do bad things. They do really bad things to one another. Imagine that there was a mystical character called the Bye Bye Man that made people do it, and you were going to go hunt him down. Welcome to the movie, The Bye Bye Man. So there you go. If that sounds like your cup of tea, go for it. Sleepless. Jamie Foxx plays a cop, and it's just... He's trying to get his kidnapped child back.
Sounds like Taken.
It does, except there's more cliches. So, again, I try to steer clear of trailers, but when I know I'm not going to see the movie, I try and watch trailers to have it. Oh, how well did they do?
Well,
I don't know how well they did in the movie, But if you've seen a cop procedural on TV in the last 25 years,
yeah,
you will probably encounter lines.
Or any of the three Liam Neeson Taken movies, yes. It sounds like. And by the way, just a little
they're
note.
That into a,
just, they're making that into a TV show.
TV show, yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's also a TV show of Training Day, the Denzel Washington.
I didn't watch it, but I love the movie.
I saw the promo for it the other day. I can't remember the actors who were in it, but I think they make it look like the white guy is the veteran and the black guy is the young
rookie. Yeah, they flipped the race roles. Yeah. Silence, Marty Scorsese's epic, 2 hours and 45 minutes. Adam Driver also in this, Andrew Garfield, Liam Neeson. Two priests travel to Japan to find their mentor, who's over there somewhere, they don't know, and also attempt to spread Catholicism in the country.
Mm-hmm.
This was years in the making. This was him. This was a labor of love for him, I believe. And the last one,
Scorsese's movies fall into two categories. One, you've got the mob movies. And two, you've got the Christian movies.
Yes.
This, Last Temptation of Christ, a couple of others.
And, yeah. Then we have a movie that we talked about last September. An exec for a company said to his young child, I guess, hey, what do you think about a movie? And his child, who you might expect, I don't know, like 16 maybe, what would you be? His three-year-old said, hey, let's make a movie about monster trucks. And he said, oh, okay. Well, no, but I want monsters, that the trucks are the monsters. Okay, so yeah, they made a live-action movie called Monster Trucks, in which the monsters drive the trucks and people sit in them. They made this movie. They were so not confident in it that last September they said, we will just, right now we're putting on our books a $115 million loss for this
movie. 4 months before the movie came out, I remember when we talked about this, 4 months before the movie came out, they know this is going to be a bomb. We're writing off over $100 million in losses for this movie.
And every now and then they'll say, oh, we're taking a write-off because we think, you know, our promotional campaign didn't work out, so we've got to write that. We're essentially adding losses into the movie because something didn't work. And every now and then they try to dress it up. This time they said, we're doing this because of expected performance at the box office. So they're burying it in January, hoping no one remembers it.
I'm surprised they didn't wait till February, because February is usually the drought month. In January, we get some leftover December movies that didn't open here but opened up elsewhere. By the time we get to February, those are all gone, and that's where February and August are the two dregs months for movies.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised they didn't hold this one until then.
So Monster Trucks, young man's trying to get away from life in a small town, so he puts a monster in a truck. I don't know. There you go.
Then you know what happens then? The monster drives the truck to work, and he works all day long writing poetry.
Writing poetry, exactly.
That's what happens. And then he goes home to his wife. And then
too much has happened.
Then he goes,
you can no longer be in Patterson. Too much has
monster
happened.
Monster wife.
Then he goes to a bar, and he and the other monsters have a beer.
And then they eat the dog.
Why does everyone have to hurt the dog? Dan, throw the dog off the waterfall.
And then
let's eat the dog.
Then they meet
pick up the dog's poop.
Then they meet Sully and Mike Wazowski from Monsters, Inc. And now you've got a movie.
There you go.
Hey, Wazowski. Get in your truck.
Mike Wazowski.
All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll have some streaming suggestions for things you can watch on Netflix or Amazon during Ice Storm 2017, right after this on the Big 550 KTRS. It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I'm Paul Harris, Dan Strauss, Ian Geist, Colin Jeffrey, all here with me. We're playing Tubular Bells because the guy who wrote the book that the movie The Exorcist was based on, this was the soundtrack to that movie. His name is William Peter Blatty. He died today at the age of 89. And I know you guys were talking about The Exorcist on the air just a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
I never got why that was such a scary movie to people. I did not see it at the height of its release. I probably saw it years later.
I can probably say now that I've never seen the movie from beginning to end.
Really?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I feel like I've seen almost all of it, like maybe at a certain point, started 20 minutes in or whatever.
I actually have a better memory of the Saturday Night Live parody of it with Richard Pryor.
Oh.
Which was probably like a third or fourth show they did in the very first season, where he goes in there and he's the assistant priest, and the priest is in there and he says, "Now chant with me." Lorraine Newman is playing the little girl in the bed, and the bed lifts up off the floor, and the other priest says to Richard Pryor, "Chant with me now. The bed must be on the floor. The bed must be on the floor. The bed must be on the floor." And the floor drops, and all you hear is Richard Pryor's voice going, "The bed is on my foot. The bed is on my foot." All right. Before we finish up the showbiz show today, I promised you that Colin and I would come up with a couple of suggestions each of things you can watch while you're locked inside for this ice storm if you have Netflix and or Amazon Prime. I'm going to start with an Amazon Prime show that I recommended a year and a half ago when its pilot came out. And then they took a year and a half to finally make it into a series. It's called Sneaky Pete. And it was developed by Bryan Cranston from Breaking Bad and All the Way and Trumbo and all the rest. Also, David Shore, the guy who created the TV show House with Hugh Laurie. Sneaky Pete stars Giovanni Ribisi as Marius, a con man about to get out of jail who owes a lot of money to a mob figure, cash he does not have. His cellmate, Pete, shares stories with him about rich grandparents that he hasn't seen in 20 years, and so Marius decides that when he gets out of jail, he's going to pretend he's Pete and scam his way into the grandparents' money, but things don't go exactly the way he wants them to. It's got Margot Martindale, who's great in everything she does, and Peter Geraghty. They play the grandparents, who at first seem like they're being suckered in by this fake Pete, but then you realize, no, they're actually smarter than he is when it comes to cons, and it takes off from there. I'm a sucker for a good con man story, and when I found out that Graham Yost had come on and replaced David Shore as the showrunner of this, Graham Yost did an FX show called Justified, which Margot Martindale won an Emmy Award for playing one of the characters in one season. I like that series so much, I am definitely going to watch Sneaky Pete, which Amazon released today for Amazon Prime. You can watch all the episodes. You can binge watch that through the weekend and catch up with it. Again, it's called Sneaky Pete. What do you have?
I'm going to start off with a comedy, and it's not new. It's older, but it's on Netflix, and odds are you didn't watch it while it was on TV because it only lasted two seasons. It is called Better Off Ted. They are short, little 13-episode seasons, 22 minutes apiece, so you can binge the entire series this weekend, if you so choose.
Okay, what's it about?
Ted works at a giant conglomerate, Viridian Corporation or something.
Okay.
And they make stuff, but they...
Doesn't matter what they make.
All sorts of stuff, and Ted heads a R&D department, research and development department. And he's got a couple scientists he works with. He's got an attractive coworker that has sort of the funny sexual tension. He's a single father, so he's got his daughter around. Portia de Rossi plays his direct superior boss. And it works on a lot of levels. It's funny just on its face, funny situations, typical sitcom stuff. It also runs throughout the show. You'll see fake ads from Viridian that say, "Oh, when people lie, it's bad. When companies lie, it's called protecting our self-interest." Viridian, people lying is bad. Companies, you don't get it. You know, it has all these tongue-in-cheek commercials.
Mm-hmm.
What's also funny are the products that they work on, because you're thinking, oh, What could they actually be sort of making at this? Well, they make a machine that is a lie detector. You turn it on in a room and it will buzz anytime anyone lies within earshot of it. Okay. So, of course, they can't turn it off in the episode. So they now have a product in their office that's in the middle of sensitive meetings where it buzzes every time someone lies.
Okay.
It works out really well. And perhaps my favorite revelation is the two scientists that are just really genuine, kind of nice, meek guys come to realize at the end the company takes all their stuff and turns it into weapons of, so they're basically evil scientists.
Hmm.
And it's just, it did not ever find an audience. I can't remember if it was on ABC or where.
Is there anybody we know in this?
Portia de Rossi is probably the most recognizable person in it. No, okay. And that actually helps because you're not attached to how you think anyone's going to act.
Okay.
Better Off Ted on Netflix.
All right. Speaking of Netflix, a show that I talked about a few years ago when it was only available on Netflix in the English version. In other words, the one that was made for English TV, which then came here, and Netflix bought it to produce their own episodes. It's a series called Black Mirror. And I know you're a fan of this series
yes.
as well. I'm going to tell you that you should not start with episode one of Black Mirror.
Nope.
Black Mirror is an anthology series, kind of like The Twilight Zone was, where each week or each episode you get a different cast, a different plot. There's no continuing storyline, except that they all take place in a slightly futuristic world where social media has been ramped up and technology has been ramped up, but not that much further than today, maybe 5 to 10 years ahead of today. And it's the impact that technology and social media has on people and that they have on each other. There's one episode where people who are terminally ill have an option of going to see effectively what kind of heaven would be like for them. And they can visit it for a few hours, and then they go back into where they were, and they can make a decision about do they want to end their life and be moved into that permanently. But by moving into that, essentially they're being moved into a chip inside mm-hmm. a giant computer inside a big room, and they're not human anymore. They're computer chips. That's one of the stories. But they humanize these stories so well. There's another story about a writer for a newspaper who writes something that everybody on Twitter absolutely hates. Everybody on Facebook absolutely hates. And they start using the hashtag death to that writer's name. And that woman dies. And then the next day, there's death to somebody else who's had a major faux pas that social media has decided to jump on and make fun of. And at the end of the day, that person dies as well. And at first you think it's about hate speech, and then you think it's about the internet, and then it takes a completely different thing where surveillance is involved. And mm-hmm. I'm purposely trying not to give too much away because that's a great thing about the plots of these stories. They all are so well done. Remember when Law and Order was first on the air? And you'd yes. see the story as it started at the ripped beginning of the that. Show, and you would think, oh, they're ripping that directly from the headline. That's just like the Bernie Madoff case. And it looked mm-hmm. like that at the beginning, but then 20 minutes later you realize it's not about the Bernie Madoff case at all. It's about something completely different. Mm-hmm. That's what Black Mirror does so well. And the shows are so professionally made. The last episode of the third season, I just finished watching a few days ago. It runs about 82 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It could easily be released into a movie theater as a full-length movie.
Yeah.
It's that good. Each episode is self-contained. But again, I'm going to warn you, because you don't have to watch these in order, you can watch them in any order, don't watch the first episode of the first season first.
Yeah.
And if you do, don't have your kids in the room while you watch it.
At all.
Is that enough of a warning for that, or do I need to be more emphatic?
No, yeah. No. You're good. But that's an unbingeable show. If you would watch five of those in a row,
you can't.
You would crawl under your covers and never come back out.
That's correct.
I thought it was the least bingeable show on Netflix until Netflix released their newest show today.
What's that?
Lemony Snicket's Series of Unfortunate Events.
Oh, my daughter's excited about this because she read all the Lemony Snicket books and was really psyched about them.
Which I absolutely get. I never read the books. I watched the movie, and the movie's good enough. But this follows the story of three children who are orphaned. And then they are delivered into the hands of Count Olaf, this evil guy played in the series now by Neil Patrick Harris.
Now, I want to just point out, there was a movie made of this that starred Jim Carrey,
yes.
which my daughter, a huge Lemony Snicket fan, hated.
Fair enough.
She thought the movie version was terrible. But because Neil Patrick Harris is involved in this, she's looking forward to
it. So they have a vast fortune. These kids do. Count Olaf wants to get his hands on the fortune. They manage to escape him. And the series of unfortunate events is what happens to all the people around these kids. This is 8 episodes in this first season.
Mm-hmm.
Don't view them that way. They're about 45 minutes long. Instead, view them as 4 90-minute long mini movies.
So watch 2 at a time?
Watch, and it will tell you because it's part 1, part 2. Don't get up in the middle of one. Here's the problem, though. They are unbelievably depressing. It is horrible what these kids go through. And you're not going to be... You might finish the two, and then you're done. And you will not want to go back to this, even though it's excellent. It's very odd for me to say this, because I'm all right with dark, moody, atmospheric things. This is just going to make you want to open the doors in the icepocalypse and let the cold take you. That is how sad and downer these shows are.
Okay.
These poor kids and the poor people around them, you're going to feel for them. This might be the best looking thing Netflix has done, though.
Wow.
Internally.
Wow.
Possibly The Crown, possibly this, but this is on another level.
All right.
From everything they've done.
Lemony Snicket's
Series of Unfortunate Events.
There you go. And one last thing I want to mention. I told you a few months ago about a series on Amazon Prime called Good Girls Don't, which is about women who were working for a news magazine in the late 60s.
Good Girls Revolt.
Good Girls Revolt. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Good Girls Don't is the name of an old song by The Knack. You're welcome. Right? It was the follow-up to My Sharona, wasn't it, Dan?
Yes, it was. Wow. Oh, man.
Why is that in my... I don't know my brother's phone number, but I know that. So Good Girls Revolt is the name of the series. It's about women working in a news magazine in 1969 and 70 who eventually sued the magazine because they were only allowed to be assistants. They couldn't write. They couldn't be reporters, etc. I really, really enjoyed the first season. I'm sad to report Amazon has announced not enough people watched it, so they're not going to be making a second season. But that doesn't mean you can't go back and still watch the first season, which is available on Amazon Prime. It's called Good Girls Revolt.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. That's the showbiz stuff for this week. Next hour, the Harris Challenge, Knuckleheads in the News, and Mike Evans all ahead here on the Big 550 KTRS.